Grace to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. There's a lady in my neighborhood, in our neighborhood. I would guess her to be in her 80s. She is, I would describe, a very sort of sour and dour person, looking at her from the outside. She spends most of every day either walking up and down the street where we live or sitting in her front yard, glowering. To look at her, it appears as if she disapproves of the world altogether. For years, I drove by her, a little afraid. She's that kind of personality, and I thought it best just to keep driving. And then one day, I thought she looked particularly miserable. It was sort of sprinkling outside, hot and muggy, and there she sat in her t-shirt and her baggy shorts and her slippers with a glower on her face. And just for absolutely no reason at all, I was moved to wave to her. I thought, what could go wrong? So as I drove by, I waved to her, and she glowered back. And the next day, I waved at her, and she glowered. And the next day, I waved at her, and she glowered. And then for many days afterwards, for weeks, I would see her on the street, and as I drove by, I would put down my window, and I would wave, and she would glower. She seemed confused by the whole thing. You know how it is when you're walking down the street, and someone says, "Hi, Olivia," and you're racking your brain trying to think, who the heck is that? And then one day, as I drove by, I waved with enthusiasm, and she went and glowered. And I thought, we have a start. This went on forever. And pretty soon she always waved back. Yesterday we got back from being away for 2 weeks, and there she was again on duty, marching down the street. And as we drove by, I waved, and then I watched in the rearview mirror as she waved at us with a smile on her face all the way down the street. My concept of neighbor in her has changed. I was wrong about who she was and what she needed. Well, today we worry and think about this story about what it means to be a neighbor as it comes to us through Jesus. It's couched within a story about what is my duty to God. What is it that God requires of me, the lawyer asks. And the answer begins with the Shema, which every Jewish child should know. It comes even to our own lips. We should love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul. We know it. But there's something more there. When Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan, I don't think it's a story of conviction to remind us of all the ways in which we have been lousy neighbors or misinterpreted the intentions of those around us. The Samaritan is not an outsider in the strictest sense of the word. Samaritans were insiders who weren't particularly liked as neighbors. They were neighbors. Well, you know how it is. There are neighbors, and there are neighbors. And they were the neighbors. The expectations were not great. The expectation of the priest and of all the others who came along the way was higher than that of the Samaritan. And yet the Samaritan is the one who carries the wounded, brings love and care. So it's not so much a matter of, I think, chastisement as a reminder, as one of our children said in the children's sermon, that our box needs to be bigger, or maybe not exist at all. It is human nature, I think, for us to try and shape our neighborhood in a way that suits us. My brother's father-in-law, my brother told me a story about his father-in-law, that whenever he would move into a new condo, he would immediately stand to be elected to the board, which I think is a mental illness in some ways. Have you ever been on a condo board? It's really hard, but he would always want to be on the condo board. And then he would want to be president of the board. And then he would get everything passed that he wanted. And then he would quit. He shaped his neighborhood. Sometimes we shape our neighborhoods to the detriment of our neighbor without even noticing. We want things to be and look and sound a certain way. What Jesus proposes, I think, for all of us is a different way of living, in which we no longer see our neighbor as a means toward an end or a barrier to our goals, but as a beloved of God, together with us. So to be a neighbor in the way that Jesus speaks of neighborhood means that there are some things that we have to set aside, maybe. I was sort of afraid of that old lady, wondering whether she was judging me or not, because there's plenty to judge. And so I had to set aside my fear. Fear of rejection. Fear of taking a chance. Secondly, I had to set aside apathy. It is so much easier to just do nothing. Just leave it like it is. As my father used to say, I'm sure it'll be fine. Just do nothing. And maybe we also have to set aside our tradition, our desires, our prejudices, our preferences. Because it turns out that our neighbors don't hold those always in common with us. And I think Jesus makes the point that the best neighbors hold none of those things in common with us. For our neighborhood to grow, for our box to be put away, it means that we begin not just with a philosophy, because that's what I love about this text. Jesus says, well, it's just fine. You can recite the Shema every single day of your life, but if all you do is recite it and don't live it, it's just words. We in church world, I bet if you did a survey of Lutheran churches, I bet 65% of them would say, as part of their mission statement, all are welcome. 4% mean it. We just keep saying it. We may even believe it. But it's in the act of the Good Samaritan that the love of God becomes transformative. For us, it might mean the simple act of being open to being more than just neighborly. Small acts of compassion may lead us into the deep waters of genuine relationship. And acts of transformative kindness and love. It takes energy to set aside those things which are keeping us from being a neighbor and from accepting our neighbor, not only accepting, but seeing in our neighbor the gift of life and God's love and God's joy. It means setting aside our own comfort and our own complacency to enter into one of the greatest adventures to which we have been called, God's selfless love. To be a neighbor for us, it seems, is nothing less than that. Being a neighbor to our earth, to the Aina, being a neighbor to those who are most in need. Setting aside our own desires for the sake of the needs of others is an act of transformative compassion. And we will be changed. In the letter to the Colossians, Paul gives thanks for the congregation and their joy and their hope. And we give thanks for all of you and for all of God's people who are in the midst of that same transformation, learning to be neighbors for one another. For me, it began with a simple and persistent wave. Hopefully, sometime in the next 10 years, I might just speak to her. But in that simple wave, I know this. In that moment of looking in my rearview mirror and seeing her waving at us all the way down the street with a joyful smile, I saw hope. And I pray for that hope for all of us that comes in the loving God who we call Jesus. Our worship continues with the hymn of the day, which I'm sure Pastor Bree will tell you what it is.